Okay, and welcome everybody. I almost forgot where my mouse was. I almost forgot to hit the microphone, lock talk. That would have been adventurous, me talking away without being on air. Streams probably would have dropped, I'm sure. So welcome everybody to another Cancel the Cabal on Tuesday early evening. Tuesday night. All over Europe. Wednesday morning in Australia and Japan, I think. A few people from southern Florida probably still have no power, I'm sure. I'm sure there's probably a lot of people from Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina. If it even hit up there. Did it even hit up there, Andy? I don't even know. Don't know whether they directed it towards anywhere but Annie's house to shut Shook and Wake Radio down. It's probably what they did. Put it right over your house, Annie. Just to shut Shook and Wake down. I'm going to continue reading the real Anthony Fauci, Bill Gates, Big Pharma, and the global war on democracy and public health. That's because we're such a powerhouse, Annie. We are making a difference. Just ask Brian. He was in here a little while ago chatting with us. I told him there was a show coming up earlier, but he didn't see it. And then I tried to tell him just before he was leaving. Hello, Melissa, Mark, Mom, Annie, everyone else. Okay. We were into this section called Muzzling Talk of Lab Generation. Went through a man named, actually the director of the Chinese Center for Disease Control, George Gao, and Dr. Tara Kirk-Sell, senior scholar at Bloomberg School of Health, Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. And here is Jane Halton, served Australia as both health and finance ministers, and is a board member of Australia's ANZ Bank. Oh, that's just wonderful. She's probably very, very reliable. ANZ funds Australia's large and influential vaccine sector. Yeah, I bet they do. Halton is one of the authors of Australia's oppressive no jab, no pay policy. She was former president of WHO's assembly today. She is chair of Gates' Global Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness. Oh, that's just nice. So now the Bank of Australia funds her, and so does Billy Boy Gates, which serves the role of diverting philanthropic and government financing towards the development of pandemic vaccines by profit-making pharmaceutical companies. She assured her fellow Event 201 participants that behind the scenes, the Gates Foundation was already creating algorithms to sift through information on these social media platforms to protect the public from dangerous thoughts and information. Oh, it's horrible. Somebody thinking for themselves. Just horrible. I swear. We should be jailed or killed. One or the other. Oh, wait a minute. They're going to do that. That's right. To protect... In March of 2020, Halton joined the executive board of the Australian National COVID-19 Coordination Commission, which imposed the world's most draconian lockdown and the most dramatic abridgment of civil rights in that nation's history. Chen Huang, an Apple research scientist, Google scholar, and the world's leading expert on tracking and tracing and facial recognition technology. Role plays the newest, the newscaster reporting on government countermeasures. He blamed the riots on anti-vaccine activists and approvingly predicts that Twitter and Facebook will cooperate in identifying and deleting a disturbing number of accounts dedicated to spreading this information about the outbreak and to implement internet shutdowns to quell panic. Matthew Harrington, Director of Global Operations and Digital Communications, Edelman, the world's largest public relations firm, which represents Pfizer, AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson, and Microsoft. Oh, they're just great people there. Agrees that social media must fall in line to promote government policy. I also think we're at a moment where the social media platforms have to step forward and recognize the moment to assert that they're a technology platform and not a broadcaster is over. They, in fact, have to be a participant in broadcasting accurate information and partnering with scientific and health communities to counterweight, if not flood the zone of accurate information. Because to try to put the genie back in the bottle of the misinformation and disinformation is not possible. Stephen Redd, the Admiral of the United States Public Health Service and Assistant Surgeon General, has the sinister notion that government should mine social media data to identify and collect data on Americans with negative beliefs. I just had a thought, Annie. Does everybody that comes into the network have to put in a if they come in and chat, do they have to put in a email address or something like that? Do you ever send out emails? I guess that was the question. I think with the social media platforms, there is an opportunity to understand who it is that's susceptible to misinformation. So I think there is an opportunity to collect data from that communication mechanism. A couple of months after exposing these ideas, Redd assumed his new post, Deputy Director of CDC Managing the COVID Countermeasures. Adrian Thomas, Vice President, Global Strategy, Programs, and Public Health for Johnson & Johnson, the world's largest pharmaceutical company, announced some important news to share from our member companies. We are our member companies, pharma. We are doing clinical trials in new antiretrovirals and, in fact, in vaccines. He recommends a strategy to address the problem that will inevitably badger these companies when rumors were actually spreading that our shoddily tested products are causing deaths and so patients are not taking them anymore. He suggests maybe we're in the mistake of reporting and counting all the fatalities and infections. This worry may explain why federal regulators choose to deliberately maintain a dysfunctional surveillance system designed to hide more than 99% of the vaccine injuries. Thomas has manned Johnson & Johnson's pandemic response and vaccine development program since March 2021. Former CIA Deputy Director Averill Haynes unveiled a strategy to flood the zone with propaganda from trusted sources, in quotations, yeah, including influential community leaders as well as health workers. She warns about the false information that is starting to actually hamper our ability to address the pandemic. Then we need to be able to respond quickly to it. On April 11, 2021, President Biden appointed Haines as Director of National Intelligence, now the highest official in charge of pandemic response. Matthew Harrington, Edelman CEO, observes that the Internet, which once promised to decentralize and democratize information, now needs to be centralized. I think just to build a little bit on what Avril said is, I think as in previous conversations where we've talked about centralization around management and information or public health needs, there needs to be a centralized response around the communications approach that then is cascaded to informed advocates represented in the NGO communities, the medical professionals, etc. Edelman boasts that tech and its biggest client, followed closely by pharma, Microsoft is Edelman's most important account. I think it's going to come down to, it will come down to, Big Brother telling you what the news is every day, just like in 1984. Telling you what the truth is, and then turning right around and denying what that truth is that they told you when you called them on it. Just like in the book or the movie, it doesn't matter. I don't remember his name now. What's the main character's name in 1984? Somebody. I know it. I just can't think of it. Having a brain fart, just like normal. Dr. Tom Higglesby is director of the Johns Hopkins Center for... Dr. Tom Higglesby is the director of the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. He is an advisor to the NIH, the Pentagon, and Homeland Security. Like many other Event 201 participants, Higglesby migrated immediately into real-life management of the crisis. 3 months later, he would move over to HHS as senior advisor of the COVID-19 response. Higglesby agrees that greater centralization control is needed. You mean centralized international? ? All right. Good job, Mo Girl. Thank you. Winston. That's his name. Yes. Matthew Harrington, Edelman, replies that information access should be centralized on an international basis. Because I think there needs to be a central repository of data facts and key messages. Hashti Taghi, media advisor, sums up. The anti-vaccine movement was very strong, and this is something specifically through social media that has spread. So as we do the research to come up with the right vaccines to help prevent the continuation of this, how do we get the right information out there? Put it on the nightly news. Everybody will believe that. How do we communicate the right information to ensure that the public has trust in these vaccines that we're creating? Kevin McAlsey, the communications officer for Gates funded agricultural projects, observes that to me, it is clear countries need to make strong efforts to manage both mis- and disinformation. We know social media companies are working around the clock to combat these disinformation campaigns. The task of identifying every bad actor is immense. This is a huge problem that's going to keep us from ending the pandemic and might lead to a fall of governments, as we saw in the Arab Spring. If the solution means controlling and reducing access to information, I think it's the right choice. Dr. Tom Miglesby, Johns Hopkins, concurs, asking if, in this case, do we think governments are at the point where they need to require social media companies to operate in a certain way? Question mark. Lavin Thiru, Singapore's finance minister, suggests that the government might make examples of arresting dissidents with governments on enforcement actions against fake news. Some of us, this new regulations are come in place where, I'm sorry, come in place about how we deal with fake news. Maybe this is a time for us to showcase some cases where we are able to bring forward some bad actors and leave it before the courts to decide whether they have actually spread fake news. Alex Jones comes into mind there with that statement. Sophia Borges, head of the New York office of the UN, spoke of putting out positive stories about people who'd beaten the disease and have a centralized source of information, and the world body that could garner the respect of everyone. I think the WHO, in this instance, might be that source of information. Crisis actors, more or less. That's what I think. That's what I think he just said. Crisis actors. Go get your shot. It's delicious and nutritious. It's delicious and nutritious for everyone. Stephen Colbert said so. Adrian Thomas added, all of the actors are saying that it's delicious and nutritious for you. Just go get it. It won't hurt you. Adrian Thomas added, it's important to think about atypical players in the private sector. Can we bring to bear in this? Question mark. Bringing multinational pharmaceutical companies to talk about why their products are safe could be seen as non-credible. Really? Oh, boy. Gates's event 201 global pandemic war game quickly demonstrated that it was reaching and indoctrinating its intended audiences. The globe's top level decision makers Gates's event 201 global pandemic war game quickly demonstrated that it was reaching and indoctrinating its intended audiences. The globe's top level decision makers. A week after event 201, the presidential aspirant Joe Biden read the Washington Post article about I doubt if Joe Biden can even read. I'm sorry, I digress. Read the Washington Post article about the follow-up to the Event 201 report co-authored by Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. According to a newly invented Global Health Security Index addressing 195 countries, no country, the United States included, is fully prepared to respond to a deliberate or accidental threat with the potential to wipe out humanity. Biden tweeted a response on October 25, 2019. We are not prepared for a pandemic. We need leadership that focuses on real threats, mobilizes the world to stop outbreaks before they reach our shores. At the end of November 2019, Rob Butler, head of the WHO, Europe's vaccine Preventable Diseases, and Immunization Program from 2014 to 2018 told the European Specific Conference on Applied Infectious Disease Epidemiology that vaccine hesitancy must be tackled and the immunization is a best buy. The triumph of the military intelligence complex, intelligence agencies, and COVID-19. In November 2020, the British spy agency MI6 announced that its spooks would be surveilling foreigners all over the world, presumably including America's, who questioned official orthodoxies about COVID-19 vaccines. Because only we can tell you what the truth is. Big Brother. Declaring the launch of an offensive cyber operation to disrupt anti-vaccine propaganda, the foreign branch hinted that... I'm going to mark this page here quick, folks. Hang on a second. I can find a pen. Page 430. The foreign branch hinted that it would henceforth target individuals who asked awkward or impudent questions about vaccines or questioned official COVID proclamations or countermeasures. The agency promised to deploy the same arsenal of monitoring and harassing weaponry and dirty tricks that it formerly reserved for terrorists. According to the Times, the spy agency is using a toolkit developed to tackle disinformation and recruitment peddled by Islamic State. The government source assured the paper they weren't kidding around. GCHQ. I don't remember what that is. GCHQ has been told to take out anti-vaxxers online and on social media. There are ways they have used to monitor and disrupt terrorist propaganda. Federal law forbids U.S. spy agencies for spying on or surveilling U.S. citizens, but the Western intelligence bureaucracies work in collaboration with one another, and the CIA often deploys European, Israeli, Canadian agencies as surrogates to skirt U.S. laws, as well as domestic and foreign corporations. They pay them too. In August 2020, after I appeared as a keynote speaker, well, you see, that's what all of these, in the past few years, that's what all of these directed energy weapons are. They may have been invented by American corporations, but they're sold all over the world and used on us. They can't just outright kill us with, American corporations or American militaries, so they pay foreign corporations and foreign militaries to do their dirty work. That's how that works, ladies and gentlemen. In August 2020, as I appeared as a keynote speaker before an estimated crowd of 1.2 million democracy and civil rights advocates from every European nation, protesting COVID restrictions at the Peace and Justice Rally in Berlin, Germany's domestic intelligence agency announced it would begin monitoring the top leaders of the group that invited me. The spy agency accused COVID protesters of trying to permanently undermine trust in state institutions and their representatives. According to the news agency AFP, now the definition of terror is broad, says former CIA official Kevin Shipp, that any mention of COVID vaccines comes under their purview. Isn't that nice? Because only we can tell you what the truth is. Only us. Government Communications Headquarters. Okay. I knew it had to be something there, Moon Girl, but I couldn't remember. A lot of the times they just put these acronyms up there and you're supposed to remember what it means. let's see. These were the first explicit acknowledgments of the pervasive involvement by Western intelligence agencies in the vaccine enterprise that the global press has long overlooked. As 2 decades of germ game simulations foreshadowed, U.S. and foreign clandestine agencies have a secretive but dominating presence in the COVID-19 pandemic response. Intelligence community alumni and active officers occupy key positions in the international agencies that promote global vaccinations. For example, President Biden's director of USAID is former WHO ambassador Samantha Power. Power is an imperialistic war hawk who, as President Obama's national security advisor, persuaded him to intervene militarily in Libya. Yeah, because Gaddafi was just so terrible giving his people tax credits for getting married and having children. And he was just so absolutely terrible for helping the North African Christians. Thousands of them. Tens of thousands of them. With the same sort of deals. Yeah, people don't even know that 40,000 North African Christians were slaughtered within that same amount of time that Barry Satoru invaded Libya. Okay, I lost my spot. Oops, I got booted too. Got booted from the chat room. She has declared that her primary goal is at USAID is to restore U.S. prestige by getting American-made vaccines into arms around the world. UNICEF's director, Anthony Lake, was President Bill Clinton's national security advisor and his nominee to be a CIA director until corruption charges derailed his appointment in January 2020. UNICEF telegraphed its brave new embrace of authoritarianism by cheerleading the Maldives legislature's passage of a bill making it a criminal offense for parents to decline any government-recommended vaccine for their children. UNICEF unsheathed enthusiasm makes clear that the organization regards the Maldives innovation as a pilot program for humanity. All right. A little bit over for the first break there, but got my spot marked, so we're here for the first break, everyone. I guess about a 5.5 minute song. Be right back.
You could see what I once was if you could go with me back to where I started from. Then I know you would see a miracle of love. Sweet embrace. And
Okay, welcome back after the first break there, everyone. Thanks for staying out. Ah, looks like our listeners did pick up a little bit there, Annie. Had 20 earlier, now we got 26. And I forgot to mention at the beginning all the stations our listeners supported, so please hit the donate button. Annie would greatly appreciate it after... That super brat, Hurricane Ian, just went through her area. Took her down for 3 days. GlaxoSmithKline's spinoff, The Wellcome Trust, has played a central role in the marriage of Big Pharma and the Western spy agencies. From 2015 until October 2020, the chair of the Wellcome Trust, UK version of the Gates Foundation, was the former director general of MI5's Dame Eliza Manningham Buller. A 35-year counter-espionage veteran who also functioned as official liaison between British and U.S. intelligence agencies, Anthony Fauci's emails reveal that Wellcome Trust director Sir Jeremy Farrar worked directly with Dr. Fauci to orchestrate the cover-up of the Wuhan lab leak evidence, assigning a staff of 5 Wellcome Trust operatives to manage the fraud. Dame Willingham Buller has served as a chair of the Imperial College London since 2011. Anthony Fauci and Western health officials widely cited the Imperial College's inaccurate COVID-19 fatality projections ginned up by the Wellcome Trust notorious epidemiologist Neil Ferguson. to justify the draconian global lockdowns. Ferguson's guileful projections overestimated fatality rates by more than an order of magnitude. He did the same with mad cow disease and other diseases du jour. MI6 spy Christopher Steele is a leader of the British organization Independent Sage, S-A-G-E, a sketchy yet highly influential collective of social scientists, psychologists, and professional propagandists who use the news media to relentlessly pressure the UK government anytime it hesitates to deploy the flinty authoritarianism needed to achieve zero COVID. Let me turn the page while I got a chance before I start this paragraph here. Steele is the only one of many former intelligence officers who cheerled draconian responses to COVID and applaud the onset of totalitarianism. One of the early promoters of the marginalization, demonization, and officially sanctioned abuse of vaccine-hesitant patients is Juliet Kayyem, former Assistant Secretary for Homeland Security under President Obama. The former member of the Council of Foreign Relations and National Committee on Terrorism. Kayyem was forced out of her high-level job at the Washington Post when critics leaked her involvement with the Israeli spyware company that makes the software system used to track and murder Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. As early as April 2019, she was editorialized for the Washington Post that parents who declined measles vaccines for their children should face isolation, fines, and arrest, and be treated to the same sanctions that government uses against terrorists and sex offenders. Interesting. As early as 1977, Watergate journalist Carl Bernstein documented the CIA's control over 400 leading American journalists and institutions, including the New York Times and Time magazine. The CIA's long and persuasive domination of the Washington Post via Project Mockingbird began with its owner, Catherine and Phil Graham, and leading editors and reporters is well documented. There is a little evidence that its new owner, Jeff Bezos, has pruned away their corrupting influences. The Post and the Times have been the leading media cheerleaders for a draconian pandemic response. On September 5, Max Blumenthal, son of the frequent New York Post contributor Sidney Blumenthal, exposed the Post for publishing a phony doctor on the street interview, in which a supposedly typical D.C. physician called for an extrajudicial murder of the vaccine-hesitant parents through medical neglect. Blumenthal pointed out that the physician was actually the vice president of technical staff at NQTEL. The CIA and other intelligence agencies aggressively recruit scientists like Jeremy Farrar, whose research involves posting in foreign countries. Additionally, it uses vaccination drives as a cover for broader strategic actions. Between 2011 and 2014, for example, the CIA used the WHO's Global Eradication Program to conduct fake polio and hepatitis B vaccine programs in Pakistan as a way to serendipitously collect DNA from individuals in its efforts to track down Osama bin Laden. No, they weren't trying to track down Osama bin Laden. They were looking for specific bloodlines, just like they did in Iraq. looking for specific bloodlines that go back thousands of years. These are only a few of the myriad examples of the closely kept involvements by spy agencies in treating vaccination as a foreign policy tool and as an instrument of fear, suppression, and control, independent or any genuine health concerns. In July 2021, 1 year and 4 months into the misery of the global lockdown, the FAA had to divert air traffic over a section of the country stretching from West Coast to Michigan to make room for the fleets of private jets converging on Sun Valley, Idaho, for the 38th annual meeting of the world's most exclusive conclave, sometimes called Summer Camp for Billionaires or Mogul Fest. In 2021, meeting including Bill Gates, Apple CEO Tim Cook, Mark Zuckerberg, Amazon founder Jeff Bezos, Mike Bloomberg, Google founders Larry Price and Sergey Brin, Warren Buffett, Netflix CEO Reed Hastings, Disney chair Robert Iger, Viacom CBS chair Sherry Redstone, and one of the lockdown's most influential propagandists, Anderson Cooper. Anderson CIA Mockingbird Cooper, who has acknowledged that he responded to a CIA recruitment poster while attending Yale. I wonder if he was Skull and Bones, or if he is. He probably is Skull and Bones. He went to Yale and Project Mockingbird and worked to indeterminate number of summers, therefore, in Langley. Plus, I'm sure from the documentaries that I've seen and stuff, he was also probably molested as a boy. I don't know if anybody else has seen some of them things, but it's pretty convincing that I'm sure his mother gave him over willingly. What's her name? Vanderbilt. That's her name, yeah. And his brother probably killed himself because he couldn't take it, like Anderson could, or did, whatever. I don't even know if I've read this yet. Yes. As early as... I read that too. Got to stop pontificating and keep my spot. The CIA and other intelligence agencies aggressively recruit scientists like Jeremy Farrar, whose research involves postings in foreign countries. Additionally, it uses vaccination drives as a cover for broader strategic actions. Between 2011 and 2014, for example, the CIA used the WHO's global eradication program to conduct fake... I read that. Okay. Where in the world am I then? Got lost. All of the discussions at the event were, as usual, closely guarded for participants acknowledged conversing about cryptocurrencies and artificial intelligence. This year, the robber barons hosted as their guest of honor CIA Director William Joseph Burns. And by all reports, the mood among titans was bullish. By that time, U.S. billionaires were well on their way to increasing their collective wealth by $3.8 trillion in a single year. Oh, that's just so nice. Just so, so nice, yeah. While obliterating the American middle class, which permanently lost about the same amount. Well, it did. These tech and media magnates, who had magnified their billions from the lockdown, were the same men who used their media and social media platforms to censor complaints about the lockdown, even as it filled their coffers past the bursting point. Each of these fat cats had helped grease the skids for the calamitous collapse of America's exemplary constitutional democracy. Oh boy, that's a joke there, Bobby. The Bill of Rights was, by then, indefinitely suspended. The participants of that event had privatized the public square and then obstructed the free flow of information and open debate, the oxygen and sunlight of democracy. Their censorship allowed their allies in the technocracy to effect the most extraordinary curtailment of American constitutional rights in history, closing churches across the country, shuttering a million businesses without the due process of just compensation, spending jury trials for corporate malefactors, passing regulations while constitutionally guaranteed transparent public hearings for or comment, violating privacy through warrantless searches and track and trace surveillance, and abolishing the rights of assembly and association. After 20 years of modeling exercises, the CIA, working with the medical technocrats like Anthony Fauci and billionaire internet tycoons, had pulled off the ultimate coup d'etat. Some 250 years of America's historic revolt against entrenched oligarchy and authoritarian rule, the American experiment with self-government was over. The oligarchy was restored, and these gentlemen and their spy masters had equipped the rising technocracy with new tools of control unimaginable to King George or to any other tyrant in history. COVID-19, a military project. And I'm going to take a little 10-second break here and get something to drink first. COVID-19, a military project. I've said that from day one. I wonder if he's going to say what I've thought. If he does, I'll acknowledge it. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought by the military-industrial complex. The potential for disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together. Dwight Eisenhower, 1961, his exiting speech. I'm getting down more and more to the final pages here, everyone. Now, let me take a second here and look. Wow. I think I will be finishing this book, or very, very closely, today. I'll be getting into the afterword before the break, I think, or just right about the break. So this could be the final reading. With all the preparations for the coordinated military response with deep involvement from intelligence agencies, it should come as no surprise that the government's COVID-19 response quickly emerged as a military project. On September 28, 2020, science journalist Nicholas Florko published in STAT a leaked organizational schematic exposing the 10 billion Operation Warp Speed projects as a highly structured Defense Department campaign with vast military involvement. The Bensonite flowchart shows four generals and 60 other military officials commanding Operation Warp Speed, badly outnumbering civilian health technocrats from HHS, who represented a mere 29 of the roughly 90 leaders on the chart. Yeah, Mom, wow. HHS's Deputy Chief of Staff for Policy, Paul Mango, told STAT that the Department of Defense was deeply enmeshed in every aspect of the project, including creating more than two dozen vaccine pop-up manufacturing plants, airlifting the equipment and raw materials from across the globe, and erecting cybersecurity and physical security operations to ensure an eventual vaccine is guarded very closely from state actors who don't want to be successful in this, who don't want us to be successful in this. This paranoid addendum seems like a pretextual effort to link vaccine-hesitant Americans to sinister foreign governments, thereby justifying the military and intelligence agency response. It is, in short, a conspiracy theory, albeit an official one. Mango told STAT that warp speed planning and debriefing occurs in protected rooms used to discuss classified information. A senior federal health official told STAT he was struck by the sight of soldiers in military uniforms ambling about HHS's headquarters in downtown Washington, including over 100 soldiers in the HHS corridors wearing Desert Storm fatigues. Health officials complained that they found themselves marginalized as Warp Speed developed into a partnership between the military and the pharmaceutical industry, presided by Robert Kadlec, who, according to Mango, personally signed off on every business agreement made by HHS for Operation Warp Speed. Warp Speed has secret deals with six major drug companies developing COVID-19 vaccines. The operations chief advisor was Mansef Slowey, a former GlaxoSmithKline official who prior to the pandemic served as chairman of Moderna, the Fauci-Kadlec Gates collaboration that would be Warp Speed's primary beneficiary. By characterizing his post as an outside contractor, Slowey, who holds roughly 10 million in GlaxoSmithKline stock, dodged the application of federal ethics rules. Slowey has since promised to donate any increase in the value of his stock. What a nice guy. I'm going to mark my spot here and take a break right here. And we don't have but one more page and some end notes, and I'll be getting into the afterword. So let me see. I guess let me find some stuff here. I guess about a 6-minute song. Be right back, everyone.
Well, I once was lost in sin, but Jesus took me in.
Just courting, right?
Yeah, right. Shackled by a hill.
He touched me, said, oh, he touched me. Let me hear you sing it, and oh, the joy.
Oh, the joy.
Something happened.
Something happened.
He touched me.
Okay, I put an extra song on there because I went and got some books. I don't know if I'll start one new one today or not, but I can put links in there to what I have that I can just see. I know I have plenty of books that I want to get to read. And I don't know. I will just finish this book off here and read the foreword and play a song and put some links in the chat for people to see what you want me to read next. The first person to be fired should be Dr. Saloui. Senator Elizabeth Warren, Democrat from Massachusetts, responded at a hearing. The American people deserve to know that COVID-19 vaccine decisions are based on science and not on personal greed. Dr. Fauci had direct hands-on involvement with Warp Speed through his employee, Larry Corey, who described himself as an ex officio member of Warp Speed governance. Corey runs Dr. Fauci's COVID-19 prevention network, which transforms HIV clinical trial networks into phase 3 COVID-19 clinical trials. Dr. Fauci was undaunted by the military takeover of the U.S. health policy, applauding the operation as a talent show. Dr. Fauci told STAT he was untroubled by the death of public health experience among Warp Speed's Pentagon leadership. If you go through the organizational boxes of Operation Warp Speed, they're very impressive. Tom Miglesby also lauded the military involvement. There is deep knowledge of science and on how to manage complex government operations, said Miglesby. It's clearly operating in a challenging pandemic and political environment, and we won't know if we have a safe and effective vaccine until the trials are finished. But it's a highly competitive group of people working to make it happen. HHS Secretary Alex Azar, a former pharma CEO and lobbyist, and Defense Secretary Mark Esper, shared top billing as the organizational chairs. Saloui, the project's formal civilian leader, and General Gustav Perna serve as Operation Warp Speed CEO. Intermediately beneath Perna and Saloui are Lieutenant General Paul Ostrowski, a former Special Forces soldier who manages distribution of an eventual vaccine, and Matt Hepburn, who specializes in futuristic warfare projects for the Pentagon, including a program of high to implement high-tech sensors into soldiers to detect illnesses and other purposes. This should be a medical and not a military operation, Holocaust survivor and medical ethics advocate Vera Sharoff told me. It's a public health problem. Why are the military and the CIA so heavily involved? Why is everything a secret? Why can't we know the ingredients of these products, which the taxpayers financed? Why are all their emails redacted? Why can't we see the contracts with vaccine manufacturers? Why are we mandating a treatment with the experimental technology with minimal testing? Since COVID-19 harms fewer than 1%, what is the justification of putting 100% of the population at risk? We need to recognize that this is a vast human experiment of all kind, of all mankind, with an unproven technology conducted on by species and generals primarily trained to kill and not to save lives. What could possibly go wrong? And that's the very end. I'm going to flip some pages, some citation pages, over to the afterword. And the afterword is not very long, like maybe three or four pages, three pages or something. I guess four. And I didn't even read the foreword. Guess I should have. Should have read it then. No more snob words, Mark. Us big dummies got to listen to me now. What I have described in the preceding chapters can seem overwhelming and dispiriting. The forced vaccine campaign and other cruel actions by Dr. Fauci and his accolades might seem too big to fail, but this is up to the citizens of our country. We can bow down and comply, take the jabs, wear the face coverings, show our digital passports on demand, submit to the test, and salute our minders in the biosurveillance state. Or we can say no, we have a choice, and it is not too late. COVID-19 is not the problem. It is a problem, one largely solvable with early treatments that are safe, effective, and inexpensive. The problem is endemic corruption in the middle industrial, in the medical industrial complex, currently supported at every turn by mass media companies. This cartel's coup d'etat has already siphoned billions from taxpayers. Trillions, Robert. Already vacuumed up trillions from the global middle class and created the excuse for massive propaganda, censorship, and control worldwide. Along with its captured regulators, this cartel has ushered in the global war on freedom and democracy. Playwright and essayist C.J. Hopkins describes the moment all too well. There is nothing subtle about this process. Decommissioning one reality and replacing it with another is brutal business. Societies grow accustomed to their realities. We do not surrender them willingly or easily. Normally, what's required to get us to do is a crisis, a war, a state of emergency, or, you know, a deadly global pandemic. During the changeover from the old reality to the new reality, the society is torn apart. The old reality is being disassembled, and the new one has yet to take its place. It feels like madness, and in a way, it is. For a time, the society is split in two. As the two realities battle it out for dominance, reality being what it is, i.e., monolithic, this is a fight to the death. In the end, only one reality can prevail. This is the crucial period for the totalitarian movement. It needs to negate the old reality in order to implement the new one. You will own nothing and you will be happy. Sorry, I just threw that in there. And it cannot do with reason and facts. So it has to do it with fear and brute force. It needs to terrorize the majority of society into a state of mindless mass hysteria that can be turned against those resisting the new reality. It is not a matter of persuading or convincing people to accept. Convincing people to accept new reality. It's more like how to drive a herd of cattle. You scare them enough to get them moving. Then you steer them wherever you want them to go. The cattle do not know or understand where they are going. They are simply reacting to physical stimulus. Facts and reason have nothing to do with it. Touché. As we consider the unprecedented bludgeoning of our Constitution over the past 2 years, it's worth pausing to remember the smallpox epidemic that stalled Washington's army during the Revolution, and the malaria contagion that culled the Army of Virginia. Though both altered the framers to the deadly and disruptive potential of infectious disease epidemics, the framers nevertheless opted to include no pandemic exception in the United States Constitution. Imagine that. Yet today the pandemic is being used to create a string of new exemptions to our Constitution. We are given just one rationale to explain everything that is happening. COVID. For just a brief moment, let's look away from the ostensible reason things are happening and focus instead on what is happening. Those controlling the levers of power vilify dissenters and punish every attempt at questioning, skepticism, and debate. Like all tyrants in history, they ban books, silence artists, condemn writers, poets, and intellectuals who question the new orthodoxies. They have outlawed gatherings and forced citizens to wear masks that instill fear and divide communities, and atomized in any sense of solidarity by preventing the most subtle and eloquent nonverbal communication for which God and evolution gave humans 42 facial muscles. Predictably, the pandemic became a pretense for expanding tyranny across the globe. And I got a hair in my eye, so give me a second here. Predictably, the pandemic became a pretense for expanded tyranny across the globe, making changes that have nothing to do with a virus. Hungary clamped down on a free speech and banned public depictions of homosexuality. China shuttered Hong Kong's last pro-democracy newspaper and jailed its executives, editors, and journalists. In Belarus, President Lukashenko subdued protests with mass arrests and even hijacked a passenger plane to arrest a dissident journalist. Cambodia abolished due process and arrested political opponents. Poland's government abolished rights for women and gays and effectively banned abortion. India's prime minister arrested journalists and ordered Twitter to remove critical posts. Russia's President Vladimir Putin used the pandemic as another pretext for jailing powerful opponents and banning mass gatherings. And democracies were not much different. France required its citizens to show a signed declaration to travel more than 1 kilometer from home. Australia was more liberal, allowing citizens to venture up to 5 kilometers from home. But then again, Australia is also built new detention centers. Britain banned its citizens from traveling abroad. Many similar things happened in the United States, including New York Senate passing a law to allow for the forcible and indefinite detention of residents deemed to be a threat to public health. But for America, freedom of speech has been the biggest casualty of the emerging tyranny. The now popular term misinformation has come to mean any expression that departs from official orthodoxies. Social media and news media companies serve as stenographer and defender of any position pronounced by government. The intentional failure of journalistic inquiry, curiosity, and investigation, the failure to probe, to ask tough questions, or any questions of those in power, has enabled the madness and sadness of 2020 and 2021. There is a web of motives at work, I'll cite a simple one. Big pharmaceutical companies are the biggest advertisers on news and television outlets. Their $9.6 billion annual advertising budget buys more than commercials. It buys obeisance. I guess that's a word. O-B-E-I-S-A-N-C-E. Obeisance. In 2014, network president Roger Ailes told me he would fire any of his news show hosts who allowed me to talk about vaccine safety on air. Our news division, he explained, gets up to 70% of ad revenues from pharma in non-election years. Yeah, that's knob word. Right, Mark. I know the role of the news media is not news to you. So I'll cite just one example. Vaccine mandates are ostensibly based upon the idea that vaccines will prevent transmission of COVID-19. If they don't prevent transmission, if both the vaccine and unvaccinated can spread the virus, then there is no relevant difference between the two groups, other than that group is not complying with government commands. Forcing an entire population to accept an arbitrary and risky medical intervention is the most intrusive and demeaning action ever imposed by the United States government, and perhaps any government. And it is based upon a lie. The director of the CDC, Dr. Fauci, and the WHO have all had to reluctantly acknowledge that the vaccines cannot stop transmission. When Israel's director of public health addressed the FDA advisory panel, the left had no doubt about the vaccine's inability to stop transmission of the virus, or stop sickness, or stop death. Describing Israel's situation as of September 17, 2021, she said, 60% of the people in severe and critical condition were immunized, doubly immunized, fully vaccinated. 45% of the people who died in this fourth wave were doubly vaccinated. Not good for the Israel's director of public health to say that. Okay, I'm just going to run with this last page and a half and then take a break for a song. So just about 5 more minutes here, I think, or a little bit less. Even so, 3 weeks later, on October 7th, just days before this book went to press, the President of the United States announced that he was ensuring health workers are vaccinated. Because if you seek care at the healthcare facility, you should have a certainty that the people providing that care are protected from COVID and cannot spread it to you.
The president told the Americans that being vaccinated provides certainty that vaccinated people are protected from COVID and cannot pass it on. Robert didn't get to put that in the book, but Joe Bob got vaccinated 3 times and he got COVID twice. If it even exists. Not one question was posed to the president about this stunning disconnect, about the obvious untruth. And that speech gives us a stark example of what's going on. A televised image of an unchallenged leader mouthing untrue pronouncements to mislead and control the population. That is the world of George Orwell's sadly pathetic novel, 1984. It is a hopeful sign that halfway into 2021, Orwell's 70-year-old book suddenly became a top 20 bestseller in the United States. Imagine that. Apparently more people are aware of what's going on than the powerful give them credit for. The awareness that basic common sense reminds us that democracies can reassert legislative control over rogue dictators. However, mayors, governors, presidents, or prime ministers, rational legislators can choke off funding that supports few and harms many. They can initiate investigations, spur criminal prosecutions, and restore freedom. Even without government engagement, it is ordinary people who can rescue us from tyranny. We can say no to compliance with jabs for work. No to sending children to school with forced testing and masking. No to censored social media platforms. No to buying products from the companies, bankrupting and seeking to control us. These actions are not easy, but living with the consequences of inaction would be far harder. By calling on our moral courage, we can stop this march toward a global police state. I founded Children's Health Defense, CHD, long before COVID-19. Our goal was to put an end to the epidemic of childhood diseases arising from toxic exposures of all types, including some vaccines. CHD seeks to educate the public and hold bad actors accountable in order to help ensure a healthy future for our children. As this book goes to press, the campaign to force unsafe COVID vaccines into children's bodies is reaching its peak. If our children are to enjoy the blessings of liberty and health, we must end this COVID-19 nightmare. We can no longer trust the experts or follow their warped version of science. That's what got us here. With the information in this book, I hope you'll educate others, engage more effectively with your local government, school board, health department, legislators, police, and often more promising, your elected sheriff. CHD has chapters around the country and the world. Join any of the many health freedom groups. Sign up for a free Children's Health Defense online news site, The Defender. Stay informed. Stay active. We can jettison this insanity if enough people refuse to participate in a new apartheid based upon forced medical procedures. The United States still suffers from the brutal and ugly history of slavery, segregation, racism, and, alas, forced medical procedures. Let us not start this all over again, condemning African Americans more than any other racial group to second-class citizen status. As I was writing this book, I read Martin Luther King Jr.'s majestic I Have a Dream speech at the Lincoln Memorial in 1963. Reverend King reaches out to us through all these years. But we refuse to believe that the bank of justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. And so we've come to cash this check. A check that will give us, upon demand, the riches of freedom and the security of justice. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of its fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Join us as we take back our democracy and our freedom. I'll see you on the barricades. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Okay, now I'm going to take the break here. And I'll pop some links in the chat to see what somebody would like me to read next. See you in about 7.5 minutes, everyone.